Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear a story from Susan Shand about Hurricane Dorian's effect on the tourism industry in the Bahamas. Later, Steve Ember brings us the latest in the ongoing American history series, Making of a Nation. But first, the Everyday Grammar Report with Alice Bryant.
In English, we sometimes follow a verb with another action. When we do this, we must use an infinitive or a gerund. You may remember that a gerund is the form of a verb that ends with the letters ing. For example, in the sentence, I love laughing, the word laughing is a gerund. An infinitive is the simplest verb form and often has the word to in front of it. In the sentence, I want to go for a walk, the words to go are an infinitive. English learners often have trouble knowing when to use a gerund or an infinitive. There is a good reason for this. There are a handful of rules. For example, some verbs can only be followed by infinitives. Others can only be followed by gerunds. There are other rules, but we won't talk about them today. Instead, we will explore a small group of verbs that can be followed by a gerund or an infinitive. But their meaning changes depending on which form is used. There are 7 verbs in this group. Today, we will explore 4 of them: try, forget, stop, and regret. Let's start with the verb try and use it with an infinitive. When you try to do something, it means you make an effort to do it. But it may be difficult or impossible, and you may not succeed, as in this example.
I tried to lift that box, but it was too heavy. Can you help me?
Lifting a heavy object is often difficult. But when you try doing something, it means you are experimenting with an action to find out if it works. As in this.
My back hurts. I tried taking pain medicine, but it's not helping.
The action itself isn't difficult, but may or may not have the desired result. The change in meaning between the infinitive and gerund with try is smaller than the change in meaning for other verbs we will look at today. Next up is the verb forget. When you forget to do something, it means you wanted to do it, but you did not remember. So, you did not do it. Say, for example, you wanted to set your alarm clock last night, but you didn't do it because you forgot. You might say,
I forgot to set my alarm clock last night.
Oh no, I hope you won't be late for work, school, or an important meeting. Yet when you forget doing something, the meaning changes. It means you did do it, but you fail to remember the act of doing it. In other words, you forgot a memory. Listen to this speaker use a gerund with forget.
Ben forgot meeting Savannah's aunt at the last family gathering.
The speaker is saying that Ben did meet Savannah's aunt, but he doesn't remember the act of meeting her. However, the structure for get plus gerund is more commonly used when someone declares they will not forget a treasured memory, as in this sentence.
I will never forget seeing my child walk for the first time. I was so happy.
Let's now move to the verb stop. When someone stops to do something, it means they suspend one action for the purpose of doing something else. Take this example.
We've been cleaning all morning. Let's stop to get something to eat.
The speaker is suggesting they stop cleaning because she is getting hungry. But when a person stops doing something, it means they have quit an action. Listen to this person asking someone to stop an action.
Can you stop looking at social media? We have a big test tomorrow.
Putting a gerund after the verb stop is also common when talking about bad or unwelcome habits, as in this example.
I stopped smoking cigarettes.
The difference in meaning here can be tricky for some English learners, so let's compare the infinitive and gerund more closely. Have a listen.
I stopped to smoke a cigarette. I stopped smoking cigarettes.
I stopped to smoke a cigarette means the speaker stopped doing something else because he wanted to have a cigarette. I stopped smoking cigarettes means the speaker no longer uses cigarettes. The person has ended this habit. And finally, we have the verb regret. When you regret to do something, you are sorry to give someone bad news. This is a formal expression and almost always goes with the verb inform, say, or tell. Have a listen.
We regret to inform you that your flight has been canceled.
But when you regret doing something, you feel badly about something you did in the past. You are not happy about it, as in this example.
She regrets choosing that university. It wasn't a good fit for her.
The person does not like her choice of school. She wishes she had not chosen it. Here are two suggestions for using the information you learned today. The first is to listen and look for the four verbs we talked about wherever English is being used. If a second verb follows, try taking note of whether it's a gerund or an infinitive. The second is to try using these verbs in your speaking and writing. And don't worry about making mistakes with the forms. Even with mistakes, in many cases, other English speakers will still understand your meaning. I'm Alice Bryant.
Before Hurricane Dorian hit the island group, the Bahamas was expecting one of its best years for tourism. Now, the future for that industry is unclear. Some of the best-known resorts in the country, like Atlantis or Paradise Island, were not affected by the powerful ocean storm that destroyed other areas. Nassau, the largest city on the 700-island nation, had little damage. But Grand Bahama Island and the Abaco Islands are 100 miles away. There, many small hotels and holiday rental properties were damaged or destroyed. That means Bahamian officials have two problems. They must keep attracting tourists, but also recognize the deep suffering of those affected by the storm. All of the donations are welcome, but they can also assist us by still visiting the islands of the Bahamas in the unaffected areas. They are open for business, said Ellison Thompson. He is the Deputy Director General of the Bahamas Ministry of Tourism and Aviation. The Bahamas Investment Authority says the islands depend on the tourism industry. It supplies half the island's yearly gross domestic product of $5.7 billion. The Ministry of Tourism confirmed last week that all hotels on Abaco and Grand Bahama are closed. Together, the islands have about 3,000 hotel rooms, or 19% of the 16,000 rooms in the Bahamas, said Frank Comito. He is the chief of the Caribbean Hotel and Tourism Association. The islands also have hundreds of vacation homes. Airbnb lists more than 600 rentals for those two islands. The government says Grand Bahama received 670,000 visitors in 2018, mostly from cruise ships. More than 100,000 visitors arrived by airplane last year into Marsh Harbor, the largest town in the Abaco Islands. Comito has property on the beach in the Abaco Islands, but does not know if it was damaged. Some hotels are providing information on Facebook. For example, the owners of Pelican Beach Villas said their oceanfront houses were completely destroyed. They were evacuated to Nassau by U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers. Firefly Resort Abaco tweeted photos of fallen trees and a collapsed building. Hurricane Dorian destroyed our paradise. We will rebuild, the resort said in its Twitter post. There also is some industry in the area. Grand Bahama is home to the Freeport Container Port, a port for container ships that cross the ocean. Hong Kong-based Hutchinson Ports owns the business. It said its emergency teams were helping with rescue efforts and trying to re-establish power at the port. Spokesman Anthony Tam said the company's nearby cruise station had little damage and was expecting ships carrying aid for hurricane victims soon. Those businesses could help speed the recovery. Carnival Cruise Lines said it is committed to a port development project in Grand Bahama announced earlier this year. It will be completed in 2021 and will be the largest port the company owns. It is expected to create at least 1,000 jobs. Tourism to unaffected islands could also bring in much-needed money and provide jobs for hotel workers. In early 2019, the Bahamas Ministry of Tourism and Aviation reported record levels of tourism, partly because of the newly completed Bahamar Resort. One of the best ways that people around the world can show their support and solidarity is to visit our other islands by air or by cruise ship, Bahamas Prime Minister Hubert Minnis said Friday. I'm Susan Shand.
From VOA Learning English, this is The Making of a Nation, American History in Special English. I'm Steve Ember. The United States became a nation in 1776. Less than a century later, in the 1860s, it was nearly torn apart. A civil war took place, the only one in the nation's history. States from the North and the South fought against each other. The conflict involved the right of the South to leave the Union and deal with issues, especially the issue of slavery, in its own way. We examine how the Constitution survived this very troubled time in American history. The Civil War was fought from 1861 to 1865. 600,000 men were killed or wounded. In the end, the slaves were freed, and the Union was saved. Abraham Lincoln was president during the Civil War. He said the Southern states did not have the right to leave the Union. Lincoln firmly believed that the Union was permanent under the Constitution. In fact, he noted that one of the reasons for establishing the Constitution was to form a more perfect Union. His main goal was to save what the Constitution had created. One cannot truly understand the United States without understanding its Constitution. The document describes America's system of government and guarantees the rights of its citizens. The power of the Constitution is greater than any president, court, or legislature. In the coming weeks, we will tell the story of the United States Constitution, including the drama of its birth in Philadelphia in 1787. Before we do, however, we want to look at how the document provides for change without changing the basic system of government. If you ask Americans about their Constitution, probably the first thing they will talk about is the Bill of Rights. These are the first 10 changes to the Constitution. These 10 amendments have the most direct effect on people's lives. The Bill of Rights guarantees freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and freedom of the press. In fact, all of those and more, including the right to peaceful assembly, are contained just in the First Amendment. The second one states a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The Fourth Amendment protects against unreasonable searches and seizures. Other amendments say that people in criminal cases cannot be forced to make statements against themselves and have a right to a speedy and public trial by a jury. The Bill of Rights also deals with the separation of powers between the federal government and the states. In the words of the 10th Amendment, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. In other words, powers belong to the states unless the Constitution gives them to the federal government or prevents the states from having them. The Bill of Rights was not part of the document signed at the convention in Philadelphia in 1787. The delegates believed that political freedoms were basic human rights. Some of the delegates
thought it was unnecessary to express these rights in a constitution. Most Americans, however, wanted their rights guaranteed in writing. This is why most states approved the new constitution only on the condition that a Bill of Rights would be added. This was done, and the amendments became law in 1791. One early amendment involved the method of choosing a president and vice president. In America's first presidential elections, whoever received the most votes became president. The candidate who received the second highest number of votes became vice president. The Constitution was changed after separate political parties developed. Then ballots began to list the names of separate candidates for president and vice president. There were no other amendments for 60 years. The next one was born in the blood of the Civil War. During the war, President Lincoln announced the Emancipation Proclamation. That document freed the slaves in the states that were rebelling against the Union. Later, the 13th Amendment banned slavery everywhere in the country, but Lincoln never lived to see it. He was shot a week after the South surrendered. The 14th Amendment, approved in 1868, said no state could limit the rights of any citizen. And the 15th, approved 2 years later, said a person's right to vote could not be denied because of his race, color, or former condition of slavery. By the 1890s, the federal government needed more money than it was receiving from taxes on imports. It wanted to establish a tax on earnings. It took 20 years to win approval for the 16th Amendment. The amendment permits the government to collect income taxes. Another amendment proposed in the early 1900s was designed to change the method of electing United States senators. For more than 100 years, senators were elected by the legislatures of their states. The 17th Amendment, approved in 1913, gave the people the right to elect senators directly. In 1919, the states approved an amendment to ban the production, transportation, and sale of alcohol. Alcohol was prohibited. It could not be produced or sold legally anywhere in the United States. The amendment, however, did not stop the flow of alcohol. Criminal organizations found many ways to produce and sell it illegally. Finally, after 13 years, Americans decided that prohibition had failed. It caused more problems than it solved. So in 1933, the states approved another constitutional amendment to end the ban on alcohol. Other amendments in the 20th century include one that gives women the right to vote. It became part of the Constitution in 1920. Another amendment limits a president to 2 4-year terms in office. And the 26th Amendment gives the right to vote to all persons who are at least 18 years old. The 27th Amendment has one of the strangest stories of any amendment to the United States Constitution. This amendment establishes a rule for increasing the pay of senators and representatives. It says there must be an election between the time Congress votes to increase its pay and the time the pay raise goes into effect. The amendment was first proposed in 1789. Like all amendments, it needed to be approved by 3/4 of the states. This did not happen until 1992. So one of the first amendments to be proposed was the last amendment to become law. The 27 amendments added to the Constitution have not changed the basic system of government in the United States. The government still has three separate and equal parts: the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch. The three parts balance each other. No part is greater than another. The first American states had no strong central government when they fought their War of Independence from Britain in 1776. They cooperated under an agreement called the Articles of Confederation. The agreement provided for a Congress, but the Congress had few powers. Each state governed itself. When the war ended, the states owed millions of dollars to their soldiers. They also owed money to European nations that had supported the Americans against Britain. The new United States had no national money to pay the debts. There was an American dollar, but not everyone used it, and it did not have the same value everywhere. The situation led to economic ruin for many people. They could not pay the money they owed. They lost their property. They were put in prison. Militant groups took action to help them. They interfered with tax collectors. They terrorized judges and burned court buildings. The situation was especially bad in the northeast part of the country. In Massachusetts, a group led by a former soldier tried to seize guns and ammunition from the state military force. Shays' Rebellion, as it was called, was stopped. But from the north to the south, Americans were increasingly worried and frightened. Would the violence continue? Would the situation get worse? Many Americans distrusted the idea of a strong central government. After all, they had just fought a war to end British rule. Yet Americans of different ages, education, and social groups felt that something had to be done. If not, the new nation would fail before it had a chance to succeed. These were the opinions and feelings that led, in time, to the writing of the United States Constitution.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.